And welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces. For the next 45 minutes, we're going to be talking with three of the four candidates running for city council in District 6. This is the seat that is being vacated by Yvonne Flores, who held it, I believe, for two terms. District 6 is the area of the city that is east of Roadrunner and south of Interstate I-25. There are four candidates running in this year's race. Ramona Batenot did not accept our invitation for this forum, but we are happy to be joined today by Tommy Black, John Munoz, and Richard Reynaud. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Want to start by just giving each of you a minute or so to introduce yourself to the listeners and a little bit about what motivated you to run for city council and what your prime objectives will be if elected, and just because I guess we'll go left to right as we're sitting here, and Mr. Reynaud, I'll ask you to go first on that one.
Okay, my name is Richard Reynaud. I'm a lifetime Las Cruces resident. What kind of prompted me to run is the my business and the vandalism and crime I've seen perpetrated on my business landlord. I walk across the street to the Family Dollar. And 4 years ago, they were walking right out the front door, shoplifters, and it happened last week. They walk right out the front door, and the clerk looks over and says, "We can't do anything." And she even says, "Why? I don't know why they allow that, because it raises the price on everything in this store." Just yesterday, I was talking to my business landlord again, and there are some people, and they're attracted by the Desert Hope Apartments. The Desert Hope Apartments have proven that Housing First does not work. Because they allow people that are still on drugs, and they give them vouchers, they live in those apartments, and they invite their friends over, which is a natural thing to do, and then they fan out over the neighborhood at night. And it's been going on for 4 years now. So that's some of the reasons. I just would like to see Las Cruces return to some kind of normalcy.
Thank you very much. Tommy Black.
Okay, well, my name is Tommy Black, or most people know me as DJ Black. Of course, I've been in Las Cruces since 2006. I'm a native of Dallas, Texas. Also, I'm a father of two, and also I'm a Gulf War veteran. So I spent 11 years in the Army. Some of the stuff that made me run was actually, agreeing with Mr. Richard here. Some of the stuff that's happened in Las Cruces, it doesn't look the same to me anymore. Of course, the big thing is going to be, the thumb in everybody's eye is the Youngs Park situation. One of the reactions, or some of the reactions that I saw to the Youngs Park situation, sort of let me down as a person in the city, because I expected our leadership in the city to do a lot more. Actually, I guess doing a lot more something totally that got me going, because I don't feel like we're doing enough, to be totally honest. So what I decided to do, since I do have a voice in the city, was to throw my hat in the ring and see what I can do. And I don't want to be one of those keyboard warriors that I always want to sit up on the internet and fuss with people. I want to be somebody that actually put my boots on the ground and do my actions. So that's one of the reasons, or one of the main reasons, that I decided to jump in the race.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. And John Munoz.
Thank you, Walt. So one of the reasons that I decided to run also was what happened at Youngs Park. I think that we have solutions that are right in front of us, and we can get to those solutions if we talk to each other and work with each other. So I've been a longtime community member here in Las Cruces. I've been involved in nonprofits, I've volunteered community, been a community leader. I've also been a business person, an entrepreneur here in Las Cruces and in the Southwest. Currently the chief relations officer at Electronic Caregiver. That's my full-time job, and I enjoy that. I have enjoyed hiring people and seeing them grow in their careers and, give back, so we are a healthcare company. And so that job is very rewarding. As a nonprofit leader, one of my organizations, I lead the, as the CEO and president of the Downtown Las Cruces Partnership, I lead that group. And we've seen a lot of success and a lot of growth where that downtown Richard and I, we were just talking before the show, how downtown has changed and how it changed in one direction. And now we're seeing, you know, what we're seeing is just a more vibrant downtown where we're seeing progress, and we'll see a whole lot more progress. But, you know, so I've had the opportunity to manage a large number of people, lead them and manage large budgets as well. And I think that we can move forward and progress in Las Cruces by working with each other, by talking to each other, and looking for some real solutions.
I'd like to ask you each specifically about the district, which, as I mentioned, is basically the area east of Roadrunner, south of I-25. Tommy, we'll start with you on this one. Can you just talk a little bit about the district and what specific needs you're hearing from the residents there as you go around and talk to them about your campaign?
Well, one, I can say, you know, going door to door that I love the people of our district, and really talking to some of the people, let's just say the people closer to the hospital area. We have a bunch of complaints about the helicopters flying over their house at 4 o'clock in the morning. Then you talk to a couple of residents, they're concerned about people speeding up and down their street, you know, which is the care. And then the big thing that a bunch of them are worried about, actually is the project, Las Cruces. The Realize Las Cruces. Well, they're worrying about who's going to move in their neighborhood. And plus, I guess the last one would be the big construction that's about to happen in the Sonoma area. So there's plenty of concerns about that one as far as the flow of the traffic and, you know, how long it's going to be, you know, the dirt and, of course, the animals and stuff like that. So that's a really big thing that I have come across since I've talked to a bunch of people in that area.
All that makes sense. Yeah. John?
Sure. You know, in addition to some of those issues, the thing that I'm hearing the most is traffic control, right? So traffic calming. And I think as we build out and work with the developers, it's going to be important to look at the flow, at traffic calming, because one, you know, are there going to be, you know, bottlenecks, and then two, you know, are some people just going to take the roads too quickly? But I think also what's important too is, you know, one of my campaign notes points is to look at smart growth. So if we're building and building out, you know, I would like to see you know, green in the air, more green in the area where, you know, families can walk and enjoy the outdoors a little bit. You know, I'd like, you know, the streets to be smart, where, you know, you can have some water reclamation, and then same thing for the medians. And as we're doing that, I think it makes sense to look at things like, smart traffic lights. Right. And so those are, you know, where, you know, you come up and the light, you know, senses you and, you know, will immediately give you a green light to go if you're the only car there. And you think, well, maybe it's just a couple of minutes, right? But, you know, think about, you know, the time that you save going back to your family or going to work. Think about also what it saves as far as, you know, the car just idling and affecting the environment. So there's a lot of good things to it. And I think now is the opportunity where, you know, we have kind of an open canvas to do it correctly. The concerns with water runoff when it does rain, you know, are important. The structure is important. And then just, you know, just building smart so that we can grow correctly.
And Richard, your thoughts?
Okay. One thing in District 6 is there's a lot of medians along Sonoma Ranch and Roadrunner that still aren't finished after 25 years. There's still dirt and it rains and it overruns into the street. So those could at least be covered by gravel, if not the full landscaping, which is a lot more expensive. Going up Loman from Telshore all the way to Roadrunner to Sonoma Ranch Boulevard, that's slated to be 3 lanes with bike path, and it's still unfinished. And those are still dirt medians there. I was told that by the former Mayor Pro Tem, Ms. Lucero. So anyway, and other problems is we're seeing the homeless up in District 6 at the medians. And one thing I'll say about the homeless on the medians, you know, common sense things like, oh, why aren't they regulated? Why don't they have a safety vest like anyone at any work site would have on? Why are there animals on the medians? have the animal welfare people in Las Cruces just given up, or with the city of Las Cruces? They're out there, and it was like 100 degrees out. The pavement's 116, and they have dogs out there. And now the other big thing is zoning and Realize Las Cruces. People are really scared about what might happen to their property value, and it doesn't mean they're racist. There can be Hispanic people like me up there that say it's going to hurt our home values if we get a certain kind of property next to us. So they're kind of scared. I want to be an advocate for the construction industries of Las Cruces. That's the former Las Cruces Home Builders Association, in their negotiations, because now there's more negotiating for little pockets of development. Is it going to be 1-acre homes? Is it going to be smaller density? And I want to help them out, help advocate for them for common sense things.
Do you mind, before we go on, Richard has excuse me, brought up Realize Las Cruces a couple of times. I'd like to give you both Tommy and John an opportunity to weigh in just on that proposal.
Sure.
Tommy?
Well, if I was on the city council when it came through, I would have voted for the people to vote on it versus me being that person saying, this is what we're going to do. You know, when we have situations like this that's of that magnitude, I think that the very people that have to live it every day should be the people that vote on it. And that's the way I would have changed the situation a little bit if I was on the city council right now.
And John?
Sure. So in talking to some of the stakeholders and constituents, so there are some things that people like about Realize Las Cruces, and there are some things that they don't like, and that are issues. What I'd like to do is go through it and get with the subject matter experts, the team or the staff in the city that is executing the new codes, right? That's one piece. And then have a discussion with the developers, realtors, the residents, to see what are the, you know, good pieces and the things that have really helped out modernize this code that I think, you know, was on the books for 25 or 30 years. So there are, you know, very good pieces to Realize Las Cruces. And then there are areas that don't work. So for example, I'll give you an example in talking to some developers. So there are some extra fees that are included in the codes. Are those needed? You know, what do they do? And if they're not, could those be reduced or postponed or eliminated, which means that the houses would be more affordable for the resident, for someone to get in, you know, a hardworking family who wants to get into a home. The difference of 20 or 25,000 is significant. I think that parks are needed in some areas of our city that have been neglected outside, you know, our district. But I also want to balance that when you and this is from kind of my business background, you know, so you introduce a new park, and that's absolutely wonderful for the families in the area. It's also important, though, to provide maintenance. So, you know, do you have enough Parks and Recs people to support that? And, you know, the water, you know, that it takes is another piece. And could that park, maybe, you know, we build it later, but for now, since we have a housing crunch, could you put 4 or 5 houses there for people who want to live in homes? And so those are, I think that's where we've got to have, and I go back to, it's important to have conversations and have some sort of consensus. You know, we're not going to agree on everything. We may not get exactly what we want, but together, I think that we can come up with some really good solutions for Las Cruces.
Yeah. Good morning. thank you all for coming. And I had a question about the GRT, right? The voters voted to increase GRT last year, and now the city's going through a process, having some town halls or gatherings, trying to get public input about how we want to spend that extra GRT that the city is gathering. So I'd like to get each of your take on it. Yeah. And we'll start with Richard.
All right. The city pushed this gross receipts tax
mm-hmm.
heavily, and then now they're having sessions and people are voting on, hey, here's what we want, and they kind of they should have known what they're going to vote on, how they're going to spend the money before they brought the increase about and have people pasting little yellow notepads voting for what to do. You know, was it for the police? Was it for public safety? I almost think that the grocery receipts went from 8.06 to 8.39. I know that because I run a business. I don't even know why they raised the grocery receipts tax. I think they should yank it back. I think we should be down to 7.5% grocery receipts tax in Las Cruces. If we really watch the money and see how it's spent, I think the more money they spend, sometimes it seems like the worse things get around here.
Thank you.
And I guess for me, once again, I'm agreeing with Richard again. We should have had a comprehensive plan instead of just putting it out there, because now you're setting people up for failure, you know, empty hopes, if that's a nice way to say it. And then it's crazy because I totally think that in so many ways we got a habit. And when I say we, the city got a habit of cutting our nose to spite our face. You know, because we'll sit up here and we'll beat the police and we'll beat the police and say, y'all not doing y'all job, blah, blah, blah. But then when it comes down to the gross receipt tax, instead of us saying, let us give you what you need so you can accomplish the mission. But then when they don't accomplish the mission, then we're mad at the police. You know what I'm saying? So now we got to rethink this whole thing. And then I saw the thing with the Brannigan Library. And one of my comments before is that we got to remember, if we're going to give all this money to the Brannigan Library, we got to think from the kid's point of view, who, you know, normally goes to the library. Library sound old when you say it to a kid. So now it's a whole nother rebranding. So all I'm saying is, before we put that out there like that, we should already have a comprehensive plan to say, when we go in here, let's not put 50 things on the board when we probably can do two or three. And then, of course, how much do we really have in the bank when it comes down to the gross receipt tax? So I think that also plays a lot in it also.
Thank you. John?
So sometimes we talk about do more with less, and the police, firefighters, you know, they do the best that they can with what they have. Really, we should be giving them our best with what they need. I totally agree with that approach. So, you know, we talked about community safety, and I think, you know, some important pieces to that are, you know, how do we proactively prevent, you know, crimes from happening? How do we proactively support the police? Some of that is funding behavioral health care, so that there is a balanced approach, funding cessation programs and encouraging those to come along with smart policing. Same thing for the firefighters. You know, these men and women rush into fires, rush in to help when we need them the most. It's not acceptable for them to be taking showers and going to the bathroom in trailers. We could do better as a city. I mean, our budget is, you know, $609 million. We can certainly spend that in a way that takes care of our first responders.
One of the things I like about this forum and not a debate is that it gives us an opportunity to take time and, you know, not you have 1 minute to answer a complex question. All three of you mentioned public safety in your first, what motivated you to run? All three of you mentioned that issue. So I'd like to give you each an opportunity to be as expansive as you can be, talking not only about police, schools, youth programs, courts, mental health, housing, the whole big ball of wax. What do we need to be doing as a community to address this problem? I know it's a lot, but it's where we're at. And Tommy, I'd give you the first whack at that one.
All right. Well, first thing, I think one of our biggest mistakes is we don't have no programs. I mean, if you think about the kids, what do they do when school's over? Nothing. You know what I'm saying? And we all been kids before, you know. Empty kids with nothing to do going to find something to do. There needs to be a program for the kids. Something to do after school. Worst case scenario, to keep them busy. They keep their minds running, everything. So yesterday, Monday, I took a trip to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and they have this great teen situation. It's called the Warehouse 505. So basically what that is that's a place where a teen can go and he can learn trades or she can learn trades. We're talking about DJing, painting. They do stuff for shirts, they're magicians. You know, they had all kinds of stuff, even sewing up in there, which was basically giving the kids something to do and also teaching them a trade. They can actually make money from working at this situation. So we have to have a comprehensive plan for the youth. Now, let's fast forward. to the homeless. There is absolutely no programs for the homeless. And they are, to be honest with you, I don't know of it. You know, I mean, I've never heard nothing about mental health, you know what I'm saying? Because all of the homeless people, instead of cupping them in one area, we got to sit down and say, okay, well, we got one that need mental health, one behavior health, one might have a drug, might, you know, one might have alcohol. If we don't have programs to make them better and get them fit to go back into the civilian world, then basically we failed them. So let's take the homeless and say I'm hungry and I see your business. I have nothing to lose because we have a catch and release. So I actually can break into your business and feed myself. So now it's starting to get to the point where we're starting to be the prisoners running the asylum. I mean, you know, so you got the kids shooting each other. You got the homeless at every corner breaking in and stuff like that. But once again, there's no program. So we built a program for these two groups. I'm not going to say it's going to eliminate all of the crime in town, but I guarantee you that the numbers will drop. So we have no plans, but we have to get both of these groups of people help. And I think at the end of the day, that's going to help a whole lot with public safety. And then, of course, building that relationship with the police department. They have so much stuff that they're working on right now. And it's easier when you know exactly what they're doing, when you can be boots on the ground. So I think if we work those three elements, then I think at the end of the day, our public perception of everything that's going down is just going to drop.
Thank you, John.
So, you know, as mentioned before, I mean, I think that behavioral health is important. Drug cessation programs are important. I think funding the police properly is also important. So, again, the approach is and we all have great ideas. I have ideas too, right? I think, you know, just like Richard and Tommy, you know, we see things from the outside and we hear things from, you know, being out on the campaign trail, and we want to present those solutions. The important piece too is to also balance that and ask the subject matter experts, you know, rank and file police officers that are out and about, ask, you know, leadership, Chief Story to see what they actually need. Because, you know, I think that, I love what some of the, what they're doing with outreach and doing some of that. But I would expand that, and I would like to see, you know, where police officers have beats and they're out in neighborhoods. This is, you know, my area, my neighborhood. So as a police officer, they develop relationships with the residents in those areas. That's an idea. Again, that's something that I would like to vet through the police department to see if that makes sense. I like how they're looking. It's more database-based now where it's, they're looking at hotspots around the city. So they're smart policing, using real data as it happens. The real-time crime center, I think, will be helpful because, you know, before a police officer, before he, she, or they go into an area, they have eyes on the ground with some of the drones. And so it's safer. It's a smart way to approach it. So there's, again, it's a comprehensive plan. I think we've all talked about it. We know it's important to staff the police correctly. I think it's also very important to pay them correctly. You know, we're in a very competitive environment, and where, you know, you have some of our first fire, our first responders that are paid at 14%. Or 14th place in the state, and we're the second largest city in the state. It doesn't make sense. The numbers don't add up. So I think there's quite a bit that we can do to support and improve community safety.
And Richard.
Okay. I think first thing is fully staff the police department, get them up to, there's still about 20 down right now. They were down about 60 about 4 years ago, and that's just huge. So they need to be full staffing so they can protect themselves, for one thing. And I'm going to just jump back to subject matter experts. It's something that Tommy said the other day, and talking about Realize. Most everyone in Las Cruces that owns a house has bought houses on the way up. They're subject matter experts on real estate. And so I just think that they got a raw deal from the city. They didn't consider any citizens subject matter experts. I bought a house, my first house, and we lived there for about 5 years. You make some money, put it down on the next house up, and that's where you make your way up to the big neighborhoods up there. And there's no we can't have any Hispanic people here or people of color here. There's people that notion wasn't even around here about 10 years ago in Las Cruces. Everybody was the same. And I'm going to jump to something that Tom was saying and John was saying, the problem of the homeless. There's a camping ordinance out proposed, and it's really a comprehensive thing. It means no more camping out anywhere in Las Cruces except for one big city lot. And there they can be observed. They can be get mental health treatment, drug treatment, and then on to maybe the next step, which would be a gospel rescue mission type place. No drugs, and that's where you get people off drugs, and then you get them prepared for Desert Hope Apartments or other apartments. Dealing with the homeless, it's a first step on ending the shoplifting, ending the petty shoplifting. It's an equity thing. It's a social justice thing. They can go in there and they can steal things because they need it, but they go in there and they steal cigarettes and things like that. So that'd be a good first step.
We are at the top of the hour, so I need to break in and let people know that you are listening to Speak Up Las Cruces on KTALLP Las Cruces, KQTO Hurley. And I will turn it over to Daisy.
Yeah. So I had a question about, and this is something I mentioned earlier, and the city council voted on this resolution on Monday. And so I just want to get each of your thoughts on the welcoming community resolution and the expanded and they added a few things. But what are your thoughts? If you were on city council, how would you have voted and why? And we'll start with John, actually, this time.
Yeah, so it's a very complicated issue. But I think that the city councilors felt that they had to make a statement about what's going on. This goes back to, you know, what I think is the problem. And I've mentioned this before, is we're not Washington, D.C. They're so far away. We see neighbors, in the stores, in churches, at the movies, at the parks. We talk to each other. You know, we're so divided as a nation that, we're not getting things done at all. We're at a gridlock. So as I understand it, and I just said a little bit more, it defines or breaks the creates a barrier between, you know, federal and local. So we are a local government. We handle local issues. Our police department specifically deals with local crime. The feds do what they need to do, and they, you know, work on immigration issues. And so the resolution defines that. It brings it back to light. I think there were some small revisions from the first one that came out in 17. And so I think, you know, if the city council wanted to pull that up and they had enough constituents saying this is what we want to do, then it made sense for the city council to go forward with that resolution.
Thank you. And Richard?
On yesterday's vote, I would have voted no, along with Matisse and Enriquez. It's just jeopardizing federal funding for our city, and I just don't see federal troops running around town throwing brown people in cars much. And I'm going to go there. And speaking of welcoming, a lot of citizens don't want to go to the city council and walk up there to the public and make public comments because they don't feel welcome. Mike Clark showed up, the boxer guy, and he's there, you know, just talking about his kids stepping over needles. He's lost two boxers in the last few years. And he even stopped his speech and said, "You guys, I come here before the city council. You treat me like I'm the bad guy." So welcoming, you know, maybe they should be trying to be welcoming to the citizens who come there with real concerns. So that's one thing I want to change.
And Tommy?
Well, man, I hate to agree with Richard again. But our mind tends to forget when we originally first became the welcoming city, how stuffed and packed the Merchite was and the place on Brown Street, and then all of the theft that was going on and, you know, talking to the residents of that area, they wouldn't go walking unless they had a big dog or something with them. So when we welcomed people in, it wasn't that welcoming. So once again, I'm going to agree with Mr. Matisse to a point. If you're going to give us a new resolution to this, give it to me in writing. Don't tell it to me, because you could tell me something now, and then 15 minutes later, after I had a conversation with two other people, I forgot what you said. So I'm one of those, I need to see it, read it, digest it, understand it. But so to go up there and just throw it, this is what we talked about. I don't understand if the city council members that came up with the new resolution, why did y'all not talk to y'all city councils before y'all was having that meeting? So to put someone on the spot like that, I think it's sort of irresponsible. And I think, you know, that's where, once again, the dialogue and the communication come together. But for you to drop it on my lap, you know, and becoming the welcome Earth City, I don't know. I probably would have had a hard problem with that. Give it to me in writing beforehand and let me understand it, digest it, and then vote on it.
We are getting close to the end here, but I did want to ask a question about housing. Mr. Renault has made pretty well. Let me preface it by saying we heard a lot last week when we were talking to city council candidates in those two races that the way you solve homelessness is build more housing. Mr. Renault has challenged that concept to some extent here, saying that there's more to it than just providing housing. So why don't we start with you and allow you to, you know, kind of explain that more thoroughly and then let everybody else weigh in on it.
All right. The housing first model, which is pushed by the city, you know, we found at the Desert Hope Apartments that it had failed within months. The whole neighborhood was destroyed. There's a house right next door to the Desert Hope Apartments that the residents would leave the back gate open and they would park every night, and they can't do that anymore. All the businesses up Solano, from Solano North, we talked to every business, and every business had a crazy story. The mayor, he had a shed out behind his business there on Solano, and it got attacked so much he just got rid of the shed. So it was real. There was no after action report, no metrics on, is this really working? Is it? And I just want to say in general, I don't like the term affordable housing or attainable housing. Housing is attainable for anybody that grows up in the United States. I know a guy that built 60 or 80 homes in a subdivision in the valley in the Doniana County. They were small homes, but every home had three rock walls, a two-car garage, paved driveway, front yard landscaping, and he sold all 80, and there was no encumbrances on the mortgage. There was no, you can't make more than 60%. You can't make more than 120%. It was a clean mortgage, all of the houses. And it seems like the attainable homes, the affordable homes these days, they have all these riders and encumbrances on the mortgages. There could be better ways, such as providing a down payment on the land. That's something that could be done, or you know, buying the land or providing a down payment and then giving them a mortgage that isn't encumbered.
Mr. Black.
Well, study shows that building all these houses is not what's going to solve it. There's a lot more to go into it. Once again, we'll say the programs. But also, I think building smartly, for instance, on Amador, we got a $15.7 million facility that's going up for the low income or the homeless. Only 50 doors, 50 rooms. So I did my math a little bit. That's over $300,000 an apartment. My house was only $270,000. So what is the true definition of low income if we're building a $270 $300,000 apartment, unless it got leather toilet seats or something we don't know about, you know what I'm saying? But we have shown that if we don't go back and do our homework and inspect these places,
yeah,
and say, hey, how are these places being ran? Then they're going to get ran over. And I mean, you know, and I'm not talking from a president's side of the house, where I'm talking from straight evidence that we've seen that, you know, walls are kicked in or doors are kicked in. Then another thing that they never think about, they build a low income housing over there in Metro Verde. How much are we stressing the schools? Now that we got 100 housing coming up, each house is going to have probably at least one child. So that one child out of that 100, has to go to the at middle school and at elementary school, then we're already talking about the educational system in Las Cruces. So now we're going to stress them even more. So once again, there we go, cutting our nose to spite our face. So I think more need to be done other than just building houses.
And John Munoz.
The, you know, when it comes to working with the unhoused to get them housed, I mean, I think secession programs, wraparound services, behavioral health, that's important, because it's a comprehensive plan. It's not just, okay, one solution is going to solve this. Not for community safety, not for housing. It's going to take several pieces. One piece that I would add that I think is important is bringing good, paying jobs to Las Cruces, with companies who reflect our values. Now I've created, thousands of jobs in the Southwest. And I want to help our economic development agencies, our economic development department, and give them the resources to recruit good paying jobs so that people can get into those homes and they could sustain it by keeping those jobs here in Las Cruces. I think it's also important to support and nourish the businesses that we have here because those business owners are vested. They know the community. They're related to the community. They have, you know, their friends, their neighbors. They want to be successful. And so if we could focus on them and have them grow, you know, 2-10 jobs, you know, 20 jobs, it's going to make such a difference. And then again, just growing smartly, you know, making sure the houses are efficient. I was about to say affordable. Sorry, Rick. Just
jump over the table.
Right. I know. Don't jump over the table. But definitely, I think that as we build, you know, these houses should be efficient and smartly built.
We're down to our last 5 minutes. Have you got something that could go quick, Daisy? Or not?
No,
okay.
Sorry, yeah.
All right. Well, let's just give each of you a couple of minutes. Just wrap up, make your final case, and we'll go in reverse order this time. So, John, you'll get a chance to go first.
Sure. So, I've been very active in the community. I love this community. I think we have great people here. I want to work for you. So please vote for me. Voting has started early and, we will go on till November 4th, John Munoz, District 6. In addition to the initiatives, one thing that we didn't talk about, you know, I know Tommy talks a lot about the youth, and that's so important. That's our future. Also want to focus on old folks like me. We need things to do as well. And so there's a balance there. And Tommy's laughing at that one. Stop it. But anyway, just I know we can be better together in Las Cruces. So John Munoz, City Council.
Thank you very much. Tommy Black.
Well, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to thank these gentlemen that's sitting to the left and right of me. Me and John talked at the beginning, and I'm so happy this hasn't been a nasty campaign, you know, which says a lot. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, if anybody know of me, I'm very proactive, you know, and I've always criticized the city for being reactive. Even the stuff we talked about today, there's no plan, you know what I'm saying? And and in the military, we had this thing called 3 P's, you know, I'm not going to say it, but you know what I mean? We've had some bad planning, which came to some bad results. So what I want to do is I want to change that. And also I got the initiative to do a bunch of stuff. So, of course, I work a lot with the teens. I work a lot with the veterans and I work a lot with the police. And the reason I'm doing that, because I want to be boots on the ground and I don't want to give you second or third hand information when I could be sitting there myself making stuff happen. So, of course, I want y'all everybody to join me this Saturday. Of course, we'll be doing a Stop the Violence Rally Part 2 down at the Brannigan Library starting at Amador. But remember, man, if you want a proactive and boots on the ground person to run for city council, my name is Tommy Black and I'm running for District 6.
And finally, Richard Renault.
All right, I'm running to fully back the police, to bring them back up to the proper levels. Regarding business, I want to help the construction industries of Las Cruces, the former Las Cruces home builders, in their negotiations with the city, because there's going to be more negotiations due to realize there's going to be more actions and hearings to be held. And regarding the homeless, I think it's time that we really tackle that problem. I don't think the city is showing them any compassion. Up there on East Loma, and there's three people on three consecutive intersections. They camp out in the desert. They come there. They beg for money all day. There's no mental health treatment. There's no job training. One of them looks like it could be a carpenter. He almost shows up at that street corner with his lunchbox. But there's nothing happening with those people. So I really wanted to back that camping ordinance, which gets all the homeless in one area and really start to address that problem.
And I just want to repeat or echo what Tommy said. At a time when our national politics is so divided, it is encouraging to see at the local level that people are able to have constructive dialogue and debate. And we appreciate all three of you joining us here today.